We have a lot of challenges in front of us right now as global citizens in terms of climate change and poverty and food waste, you know, everything. And biomimicry comes from this hopeful space.
Studying owls, penguins, and kingfish to solve problems with Japan's high-speed bullet train or whale fins to improve wind turbines are just a couple of examples of how Montana-based Biomimicry 3.8 combines the power of nature and business to solve modern-day problems. The company grew out of Montanan Janine Benyus's 1997 award-winning book, Biomimicry, Innovation Inspired by Nature, and now offers consulting and training services to individuals and companies from its headquarters in Missoula, Montana. Today on CanDo Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Biomimicry 3.8's Managing Director, Nicole Hagerman-Miller, joins me to discuss the fascinating world of biomimicry and how its sustainable solutions improve the world around us. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
Will you tell our listeners what Biomimicry 3.8 is?
Yes, I'm happy to. So biomimicry, first of all, the word is from kind of the Greek word bios, meaning biology, and mimic, to mimic. So biomimicry is mimicking biology. So 3.8 is there's 3.8 billion years of life on Earth that we can use to emulate and to design from. So our name, Biomimicry 3.8, is there's 3.8 billion years worth of intelligence in nature that we use to do our work. So that's
and also kind of tell our listeners about Janine Benyus and her book and how this all got started, because it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, it's a great story. So she wrote the book in 1997 is when the book came out. She's a biologist. She's a writer. She writes about biomimicry, innovation inspired by nature. And suddenly, like, all these people start calling her and saying, oh, well, I want to use this in my company. I want to innovate like this. I want to use it. And can you and your team come out and help us how to do this? She's like, my team? I'm a biologist. I'm a writer. What are you talking about? And so it really kind of organically grew. Our company grew from her book into people just being fascinated. It's such an easy topic to be fascinated by. It's very inspirational. When you look at everything that's happening in nature and everything that we can learn by it, people are kind of naturally drawn and attracted and inspired by it. So from these inquiries really came the launch of our company, which is building a team of biologists who would unpack companies' challenges and really learn what we can identify, what we can extrapolate from the biology and bring it to a solution space.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting in one of her expressions that she uses is we live in a competent universe, that over these 3.8 billion years, Mother Nature, you know, the natural evolution of things have gotten most things right. Mm-hmm. So when do companies know they need you? Is it because of failure? They can't get something right, like the Japanese train that had sonic booms, mm-hmm. or trying to figure out a replacement for staples and sutures and looking at natural adhesives that I think originally came from gecko hair. I mean, do they fail and they say, well, there got to be a better way to do this?
It's both. So we get companies come to us for kind of two reasons. They've tried everything else and are now open to trying this process. Or they're very cutting edge. They're very forward thinking. They operate in white space and they want to know what they can do to kind of be different and come out ahead. So it's very often used as a competitive advantage for new innovation, but then it's also used in terms of, like, our team is stuck. We need a new solution. Help us.
And do you have all the capability in-house, or do you have to also bring in consultants and advisors to help you figure out a solution that a company's presenting with you with?
It depends on how far we're taking the solution. Some companies want a prototype. And we have two lab partners that we work with. One is actually here in Missoula, Montana, and that's Blue Marble Biomaterials. So we work closely with them to actually help us take our concepts, move it into a lab, and do some iterative prototyping so that we can actually go back to our client and say, okay, here's actually a model. And what we try to show is what can be scalable and manufactured. Because the further we can get in that process, the more likely that we see our design concept moved into a product or a process or something that's then adopted.
So without divulging any confidentialities or secrets, how does it work? A company comes to you and you know, you can give me an example or you can make one up. How does the whole process work?
Companies do come to us. We're very fortunate right now. We're very much in a responsive mode. And they typically come with a challenge. And if they don't come with a challenge, oftentimes it's because they want to just help their teams think differently. So in that case, we'll do like a workshop. We'll get people outside. We'll show them kind of the phenomenon that's happening around them. They get inspired. They go back. They go and apply it to their work. So that's kind of like basic entry level. If a company has a specific challenge, what we do is our team, first of all, they unpack the challenge to get to the function. That's kind of the key. So for example, Apple wouldn't say, tell us how nature would create the next iPhone. We would say, well, how does nature geolocate? And then that's what we would use to find strategies.
She'd be looking for bats somewhere to figure out how they
worked. Right? Sure. So we break it down to the functional level. And then once we have the function, then we have all the biology that can inform that. And then our team, what they do, their incredible team of biologists and scientists, chemists, engineers, they actually break that down and distill and distill and distill until they get to like 5 to 10 really solid strategies. They look at both the strategy, the organisms itself, but what's the abstract design principle across all of them that can be like gleaned to find like one incredible kind of new concept or new formula. And from there, we go into prototyping stage. So if it's a product, we might go into the lab. But if it's a building, we might go into CAD design and drawing.
So for you, what's the coolest thing that you've worked on?
Oh my gosh. I just have to say, like, I'm like mind blown every day. I'm so lucky that I get to just learn. I would say one of my favorite projects that we've worked on was a building that we did for the U.S. Forest Service in Nevada. And this project was, so it's in the desert, and they were looking for a way to have a low-cost cooling system. And so what we did is we looked at all the organisms, the keystone species that actually live in that environment. And we found this rabbit that lives there that does heat exchange in its ears, right? The thermal dynamics in its ears and how it exchanges heat. And we actually use that to inform the design of the heating system, the heating and cooling system in the building. But that's not the coolest part of the project. The coolest part of the project is it was a really kind of controversial space. I wouldn't say controversial, but there was a lot of stakeholders involved. So you have the government, you had local tribes, community, a lot of people who had a very strong opinion about what this building should be. So anytime you have lots of opinions, right, it's challenging. But what they could all put their energy behind and what they could all get excited about was the biology. It's science, right? Like no one argued that, oh, okay, these are the organisms that are really unique to this place. Let's use them to inform the design. So instead of it becoming someone's vision for design, it was the organisms that were there. And everyone could support that. And to me, like that was a really cool aspect of the project.
So how did you get involved in not only biomimicry, but sustainability in general? How did that become a passion of yours?
It became a passion of mine probably through my work with Overstock.com was when I first got exposed to it. So my job there was to develop our sourcing. All the products that we source directly, I oversaw that. And so that required me going to factories in locations all over the world. I've seen more factories than anyone probably ever should. But it really, I became privy to the process, I would say. And I became aware of all the negative externalities in the process. So what do I mean by that? So if you're trying to manufacture a chair, for example, so you've got the plastic that goes into the arm or the wood that goes into the arm and the fabric that goes on it and the cushioning that goes in it. Well, every piece of that has a negative social and environmental impact that we as consumers never see. And so I became aware of that because my job was to try to reduce those. And what was challenging and maybe even somewhat depressing for me at the time was that no matter what I did, and even though we were relatively big in terms of a buyer for that factory, it didn't matter because there's the Walmarts, the Targets, the everybody, it doesn't matter who you are, like the whole world like consumes at this rate that no matter what I did, it was going to have a small impact. And so that's where I really became aware and conscious of these negative externalities and what their impact was to the people and the environment around them. And so that's where, and that's kind of really my intersection with biomimicry, is that biomimicry comes from a very hopeful space. We have a lot of challenges in front of us right now as global citizens in terms of climate change and poverty and food waste, you know, everything. And biomimicry comes from this hopeful space, right? So like in nature, there's no waste. Everything is a nutrient. And so how do we take those lessons to start to apply them to our packaging? Like, for example, an orange, right? Like the nutrient is in this small pulp, and the pulp is then packaged in another unit and the section of the orange. And then that section of the orange is packaged together within this rind. But there's no actual waste, right? Like everything is kind of nested and modular and functional. And from that, we can learn quite a bit that we can apply so that we're solving innovation at the front end and not coming up with these kind of band-aid tailpipe solutions.
Let me talk about the organization for a minute.
Yeah.
Lots of times you have a very charismatic founder, in this case, Janine.
Mm-hmm.
When did she know she needed an organization around her? And when did she learn or know that she needed a managing director like you to come in and run it? Often there's a lot of resistance to that by founders.
Yeah, I'm so lucky that the founders of this company, because it's not only Janine, it's also Dana Baumeister. And it was really the combination of the two of them that grew this company, because Janine brought this concept to life. And then Dana said, okay, well, if this is going to actually have uptake in the world, we need to teach people how to do this. So Dana really designed, what is the process? What are the methodologies? What are the principles that can be taught that we can then learn this? So the two of them together really grew this company. And I think, you know, I can't answer that specifically if they had this like aha, like, okay, we need a managing director. But it became more clear that they needed someone to manage their clients and the client process. And that's really how I started with the company, was just someone who could, from the outside, someone who was in manufacturing, could understand where our clients were coming from, could help them try to find a pragmatic approach to biomimicry. Because the challenge with biomimicry is that it can seem very esoteric. And companies are, while they're inspired by it, they don't know what to do. And they don't know what to do on Monday, right? Like they hear Janine's TED Talk and they're like, that was amazing.
Right. What do I do?
Now what? You know? And so that was really my role. And then it quickly became clear that we needed more process and systems that supported growing a company versus, you know, it really kind of organically it evolved from that stage.
So what do you find is the greatest challenge of trying to intersect a business model with a scientific model?
Oh, my gosh. It is amazing how much time I spend with my foot in kind of both worlds, trying to translate the two. So what's most challenging, I think, is honoring the kind of rigor of the science, but distilling it down to a point where people have enough that they can move forward. And so I'm constantly trying to kind of go back and forth between the two.
Well, plus you also have the interface then with corporate clients. I mean, you've worked with some of the largest companies on the planet. How many people are working now at Biomimicry?
So we have 15 full-time people.
And then consultants.
And then
and
we
advisors.
Have a team of consultants.
So taking a company that size and interfacing with like Google is, you know, a challenge.
It is a challenge. Yeah, absolutely. Because not only, so these companies have their own processes, their own systems, and their own innovation strategies and whatever. So you have to plug in seamlessly to that. But then, like I was just having this call this week where one of our clients wanted a set of content, material around some concepts. But our scientists were like, well, that will take months to develop because we've got to go deep into these principles to understand that. And the client was like, I don't want you to go deep. I just want the surface level. But to the scientists, they're like, but surface level isn't like, where's the integrity in that? You know, like they need to be able to back things up because they're scientists and that's what they do. So it's finding that balance all the time of like, what's enough information that can lead to a new inspiration or a concept to even start that process versus having the rigor of a scientific research process.
We're talking with Nicole Hagerman-Miller, Managing Director of Biomimicry 3.8. Nicole, you're a serial entrepreneur yourself. You've started businesses. You've worked for companies that were starting, you know, new departments. What have you learned from being involved in the startup experience that you can share with our listeners?
Well, I've learned a lot of what not to do.
Important.
As well as what to do. I would say one of the things I learned is that I have no problem not doing things myself. I love surrounding myself with smarter people than me and people who know how to do things. For example, like when Patrick Byrne asked me to launch our sourcing division of Overstock, I didn't know the first thing about containers and ocean vessels and shipment, but I knew someone who did and put them very close to me so that I could figure all that out and have that person be part of my team. I would say that's one lesson I've learned, is that there's part of an ego, right, that like you want to develop something, and letting go of that ego so that more people can kind of lift up what you're ultimately trying to achieve.
So why do some startups with good ideas fail to execute? You've been involved with at least one of those that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
And then why do others grow successfully? What have you seen? Is there something that you can pluck out of that experience that you could share?
Yeah. I can say I'm even going through some of this right now with our own company. I would say, you know, there's a couple things. I think having effective leaders is always great, and really setting the tone for putting ideas into action. Because I think there's a lot that you can talk about in terms of strategy, or we're going to do this, or, you know, this is kind of the way forward. But if there's not action and accountability, then it just becomes a lot of people in motion, right?
Right.
So that's one thing. And then focus. Like at Biomimicry, one of our biggest challenges is that biomimicry applies to everything. Like we've worked on everything from companies from Shell Oil to Nike to Colgate-Palmolive to Jacobs Engineering. You know, so it's like we're really broad in terms of the industries. We worked with over 25 different industries. And maybe that's a good thing, but it's also a challenge in that when I am really talking to people about the value that biomimicry brings to their company, they immediately want to go deep. Like just this week, a company was asking me to give them a very specific example about signaling and software technology. And, you know, give me an example of how biomimicry does that, or how nature does that, and how you've worked on that. It's like, well, I can't, because we haven't done that yet. So I would say there is a focus need for companies to be able to prove that, okay, we're good here. And then once you get good in one vertical, you can grow. And I think there's so many nuances and context to that. But I think focus is such a fundamental key for any startup, because so much opportunity comes along that you've got to know where you're going.
What you just said leads me to another question. Does your service that you offer to companies apply to services and processes as well as to products?
Yeah, absolutely. So processes, buildings, products, cities, governments, we've worked in all of this. For example, we worked on a project with General Mills where we actually helped them identify a process in their supply chain and in how their supply chain machinery was working that was eliminating some kind of heat exchange and energy, and I can't get into the details, but we were looking not necessarily at their product, but their supply chain process and how we could make it more efficient by using different strategies in nature.
So as your organization has evolved, the, if I can use the term, industry of biomimicry has also evolved, and you do have now competitors out there and people doing other things. So how do you respond to the competition at this point?
I would say what's really fantastic is that biomimicry is very much in the zeitgeist. People are doing it. They're talking about it. But it's not necessarily synonymous with us and our work. So
Right. That's
a good and bad thing, right? Because we want people to do biomimicry. Like, this type of innovation is better for our world. Like, it will make a more sustainable planet. It'll make us healthier human beings. So that's a good thing. If we're not always getting the work, is that a bad thing? Yeah, there's certainly, you know, I would love us to be the first name that comes up when people think about it. The challenge is that when people are thinking about biomimicry or doing biomimicry, they're often not even using that word. Like, there were two articles that came out in two different science publications last month, both of which were biomimetic, but they didn't use the word biomimicry at all. So I see that being more of my challenge, is people looking to nature and doing what we do, but not even relating it to this whole field of biomimicry, which has a very kind of developed practice.
Sure. So what does the future look like for your company? Now that everybody knows about biomimicry and they want to emulate nature and all of those sorts of things, where are you going?
Well, one of the things that I'm really working on right now is so much of our assets as a company lie in the IP that we've developed.
And IP for our listeners is?
Intellectual property. And sometimes that IP can sit on a shelf. A client chooses not to move it forward. You know, for whatever reason, the IP is idle. So it's sitting idle on a shelf. And oftentimes we own that. So one of the things that I really want to do is unpack where we can take that IP, develop actual technologies and or products that we can then license back to companies and sell it so that we go from being kind of a platform company to a product quote company. And whether that's a design, a process, a formula, we then start owning more of our work versus doing it for somebody else.
Has the biomimicry industry stabilized to the point where you can go to school and get a degree in biomimicry?
It has. In fact, we do that. We partnered with Arizona State University to deliver a master's degree in biomimicry. So we have the Biomimicry Center there, where one of our founders, Dana, she sits there half-time with the center teaching students how to integrate this into their field. And what's really impressive about the program there, it's a cross-disciplinary program. So it's not like you go into biomimicry and that's your whole field of practice. You're an engineering student and you bring in that element of biomimicry. So we're applying it to other fields so that people then have this ability to, when they're sitting at their desk solving their engineering problem or their medical problem or whatever it may be, they have the knowledge to say, okay, what would nature do? And then actually know how to tap into
that.
So
you can do cross-disciplinary, like they do MBA and law degree. You can now get a law degree and get a degree, a master's degree in biomimicry.
Exactly, exactly.
And are people graduated from the program already?
Yeah.
Have you hired any?
We have, actually. And some of our clients have hired them, too.
That's even more important.
Which is even, we love that.
So the company's growing, you're getting more clients. What do you see really, and this is a global phenomenon, is this happening beyond the United States? I know of the Japanese train example, and mm-hmm. we talked about it in the intro. You know, there was a, you know, the high-speed train was breaking the sound barrier, breaking, you know, as they were leaving the tunnel, and you were able to come up with solutions so you could get rid of the noise pollution. But is this taking off in other countries as fast as it is in the United States?
It is global, definitely. And there's a lot of advancement, definitely in Europe, because they have regulation that's driving it, right? Oftentimes, biomimicry is used to get rid of a negative problem. So whether it's a toxicity or material, and some countries are more progressive in their legislation to remove toxic materials and ingredients.
How did you learn to do what you're doing? I know you went to the University of Montana. They didn't teach this. How'd you learn to do what you're doing?
So one important distinction is I am not a biologist. What I do is I lead the strategy for the company, and I really lead the team in terms of how do I make our team perform at their best. So I'm actually not in the biology. I get to read our reports and read the work that we do, which is mind-blowing, but I'm not doing the biology itself. So what I'm doing is leading in strategy and relationships and, you know, building relationships with our clients and with our team members. And so that I learned, I would say, you know, it probably started here, and I would say it starts, you know, with my roots in Montana, right? I have a strong work ethic, and I have probably
fifth generation Montana,
yes. So I think that's a key part of it. And then I think I was lucky to work for, you know, people like Patrick Byrne and even the chance to work with you at the World Trade Center.
And Patrick Byrne is the
CEO of Overstock.com. And, you know, to really get like insights early, I think I started, one advantage I think I had is I started my career early and, you know, being like 21 and representing our company and, you know, negotiations in Milan, you know, doing things like that sort. So I think I had to learn quickly, and I had to do, you know, what's this kind of term now, like fail fast and grow. So I think that's kind of helped me a lot in putting me in terms of where I am today.
So last question, what is the greatest challenge facing your organization right now?
The greatest challenge facing our organization right now is where we want to have the greatest impact. We have a lot of opportunity in front of us, whether it's working with our architecture and engineering partners or working with cutting-edge technology companies or apparel companies. There's so much opportunity for biomimicry to make an impact in the world. And as I said earlier, we're very broad. And so that allows our impact to be surface level. And I think to recognize the change that's possible with biomimicry, we probably need to go deeper or need to have more examples, be better storytelling of the work that we've done. Some of that is problematic because our clients are very protective of the work that we do and we can't talk about it. And so probably one of my biggest challenges is getting our clients to be conscious that the more they talk about it, the more they're actually benefiting their industry, the world, whatever it may be, because they're giving people confidence, like their psychological safety, safety in numbers, right? The more people that are doing it, the more boards of directors or leaders will be open to this idea. And so that's probably one of my biggest challenges is convincing our current clients to talk more about their work so that more people are exposed to the impact that it has.
Nicole, thank you for joining us. Your future is exciting and daunting at the same time, particularly when you can do everything for everyone. It's hard to get focused on doing the right things for the right clients, but I think you're well on your way to doing that, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. Comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from previous shows. Listen next time to Can Do when our guest will be Stephanie Sample, Missoula entrepreneur extraordinaire, talking about her and her husband Joe's eclectic business empire. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.